Thank you, Rosie. And thank you so much for inviting me. It's lovely to be back in Cork to read. Am I standing close enough to this? Yeah, okay. All right. A little mix up over names here, but it was absolutely lovely to hear your reading, Leah, and I hope I live up to your expectations. Okay, so I'm just going to dive right in. I've just come from Dublin on the train today, and so this was written close to where I live in Dunleary Rathdown, Sandy Cove. A heron, ankle deep in kelp, turns and creeps, her neck stretched out, startles, hunts her way across the intertidal zone. I stalk the bird who stalks the rock pool shadows. Here hops a sparrow down to the kelp. He picks morsels from fluorescent sea lettuce. A grey heron snags a fish. Next day, the shoreline feeds one wagtail and two hooded crows. Five seals rest on half-submerged rocks like boats. Then I hear sweet singing off-key. Lift these fogged old binoculars and watch the seals open their mouths in song, faces turned, snout to snout. And since I'm right here, don't feel you have to clap at everyone. So Rosie requested me to read a tree poem. And so what I had actually planned for you is, so this book is called Island and Atoll. It was launched in March, but there's a middle section that didn't make it into the title, which is called Ocean. So I've been, the last section was made in collaboration with a composer. So I've been doing some readings with musicians and reading the atoll section. So it's really fantastic to have the opportunity to read from other parts of the book. And so this is mainly the ocean section, but I'm going to go inland to find a tree for Rosie called the Commons. Under these houses, a field. Under that wall, the ghost of a hedge where bats once flew all summer from dusk to dawn. In damp corners, nettles to nourish the peacock caterpillars burst through veneers of pathway and lawn. In our times, the future begins in a garden where one hawthorn, spared when it volunteered from a crack in the paving, unfurls its leaves, a feast for larvae, soon to be emperors, fluttering nightly at ghost white moth flowers, all food for the coal tits and robins. See how a fairy thorn has nectar for 900 bees, haws for those thrushes, food for the infinite song. From all agents of absence, we reclaim the tune. So back to the coastline, the coal. Out walking the rack line, Dublin Bay, I found a chunk of coal bearing the calcified trail of some sea creature, its life recorded on land-wrought fuel, lost overboard to the barnacles, then tossed back out in the endless commerce of sea and shore, of busy port and habitat. News reaches us from a distant quay, a coral island in Torres Strait, where the mosaic-tailed rat, Melamis rubicola, technically a mouse, was driven extinct by climate change, starved or swept away, First mammal victim, count the loss. Bramble K grows only pigweed now. A tower marks the island where you'll find scattered fuel on coral sand, a long abandoned freight of coal. So I'm going to stay in the Antipodes for the next poem, which is from my earlier collection, Journey to the Sleeping Whale. And this, the cover picture is by a Cork artist, so Bertie Pringle, who lives in Ballybotten. So I wanted to find one poem to read out of this for you. And this is Lament for an Extinct Species. And it's about Benjamin. He was called Benjamin. He was the last thylacine, and he died in Hobart Zoo, 1936. And thylacine. So the thylacine was a so-called marsupial wolf. So they lived in Australia and Tasmania, and that was like a wolf with a pouch, like a dog with a pouch, except marsupial. It was striped. Yeah. And so it was a very significant animal because it's, you know, it's completely unique to have a marsupial predator like that. And in fact, there it had its two closest relatives, the numbat and the Tasmanian devil. They're critically endangered at the moment. And, you know, its habitat is not somewhere I've been, but at the Natural History Museum in Dublin, there is a specimen of a thylacine. And the really tragic thing is that, you know, when these animals became rarer, then there was a huge bounty on their heads because the museums all wanted a specimen. So, Lament for an Extinct Species. One. The mercury sank lower than ever when Benjamin, last thylacine, locked out at night, died. It was a forgotten event. No bones or pelt kept. Regret is 3 minutes, 9 seconds of silent film footage. Once carved into Ubir rocks, we scratch his image onto paper. These are relics, skeletons a museum bought from bounty hunters back when the species declined and relatives died in cages all over Europe, neglected, unbred. Two. And how do we grieve for a species? One woman went a bit mad, tried to conjure the thylacine back, nurture ghost whelps at the breast. On her bra, rose petal stains remain from the pink rose petals she tucked in like tiny shell bodies of marsupial pups in the pouch. Three. I come to this discipline in rage, looking for a voice to sing me as deep as the whales. I come with the weight of 1,000 books on my back, asking it to release me into my own body. I come in despair, looking for images to rose tint my eyes and flow out of my mouth. To this discipline, begging for wisdom to utter the word extinction, I come. Deep in the coal mine, Carboniferous fossils. Other Victorian disasters. The Franklin Expedition, 1845 to 1848, lost with all hands. Ice slots scribbled onto ropes, ship stove in, winter solid sheets of Arctic sea suspending our hold boat above the deeps. Spoiled provisions on our tongues, meat spooned from tins soldered with lead has blown holes in our brains. We race naked from the wreck, sacks of spoons, forks, knives on our backs, rescued valuables from the ice-bound vessel. Ship abandoned, we're running with broken thermometers, teeth and gums turned blue, lips peeling back into snarls, toes blackening and dropping off, fingers half gone, we can't feel the mitts of our hands, yet we carry scraps, metallic mouths opened, shouting words swallowed in condensation, splintering onto our faces. We blunder over frozen seas with bags till we become bodies of men on a journey, white wastes of ice taking us one by one. Did we gnaw the bones of animal companions? We have forgotten, we forget. So I'm getting a bit grim here, so let's move to the present. Okay, meteorological upset. Three starlings flew through a hole in the Arctic ice and landed on our washing line. So this next one is called Goddess of Rivers, Blue Cow. And I thought I'd read it here because I thought you might really enjoy how it came about. And what happened was sort of by chance, you know, when you're on the happy path of writing poems, sometimes things just fall into place. One chance follows another, and that's really the magic of it. So for complex reasons that I won't go into, I was invited to UCD to give a little paper, just 5 minutes. But by coincidence, that conference was going on at the same time as another conference, which is absolutely fabulous. There were 200 poets came to Dublin from Canada to kind of wow the whole of Dublin, except not very many people knew about it. And the only reason I was there was because I was giving a paper at the simultaneous conference. So I said, oh, this is amazing work. And so I kind of shifted over and I abandoned my conference and listened to all these wonderful Canadian poets. And, you know, there was, I don't know if you've heard of Joshua Whitehead, but he came to the National Library and gave the most amazing reading. Anyway, part of the conference also invited what they called a 24-hour instantology. So it was quite elaborate, right? They said they were going to have this instant poems, which you all do so wonderfully, and it was great to hear all your instant poems. So this particular one was very academic, you know, it was to be after James Joyce's Ulysses, page 317, the Cyclops page, right? So all these fancy poets were supposed to write something after this one page. So what I did was borrow some of those fantastic hybrid words. So you might see them in this poem. And also the other thing I want to admit is that I'm a biologist, and yes, as you heard, but my discipline originally was genetics. So, you know, the details of the loss of species and so on, it sort of bothers me and it's at the back, but I've tried to get away from the scientific language. So engaging with James Joyce's Ulysses, page 317, certainly gets you away from the scientific language. So here we go. Goddess of Rivers, Blue Cow. The blacksmith had a Spanish beast. Gobnu's grey cow was her name. She glowed cerulean as a sea glass holy stone among the Dundunkety mud-coloured cattle on the hill, and gave so much milk it flooded in seven streams from a sieve held by the crone. Balor cast his one front bulging eye on the cow, and while the baleful eye kept watch, he stole her from the forge. Away to Ilon Tori he rode in his curragh, towing the poor moiled cow with a byre rope round her throat and nose, plumb eye rolled. The blacksmith, following the same 9 miles through a pattern of water, was distracted when he saw Balor's daughter. many years later, their son killed Balor with a hot poker through the head, out of which rolled the one baleful eye like a red bank oyster. By Newspaper Now time, the last Tory Island cow had no calf, and the government sent a fiery bull named Felix, grandson of Letterkenny Eagle, from Longford on the ferry, and winched him to the pier. But the bull, a strawberry roan, was too big for the island, and without issue he was sent home. Now the milk is delivered by helicopter in plastic bottles, and the goddess is extinct. There'll be no cow suited for exposed islands unless they breed a Kerry with a Dexter, or a cerulean blue shorthorn is found wandering the mainland hills or hiding in a byre near the place of the eye.
You're a great audience. But
that's the first time we've read that version from it. So, Okay, where are we? We shift gear here. This is a haiku sequence. A sea breeze stiffens, small brown butterflies alight on lady's bedstraw. Intertidal zone, a preening cormorant shows her yellow throat. Path to south pool wall, marum grass and mustard knit the sand. Bees buzz around, closed thistle heads, grass still wet. Crouched in the bird hide, longing to spot a water rail, we see butterflies.
And I got here early enough to see some of the poetry films, so I know you've probably all seen them several times over. Then my friend Brian Kirk made a poetry film called Red Line, and that was also a haiku sequence. So it's interesting the kind of cadence that comes off the tongue when you write in a form. It's okay. So the next two I'm going to read were written in Norway. I went on a really short residency to Bergen on a rainy Sunday in Bergen. A pot of parsley struggles on the windowsill. Outside, all is clouded sky. Raindrops cling to the glass. Church bells chime in a tangle of low and high notes, almost a rumble, still pulled hand to rope by bell ringers. And I wonder what the clamour of those bells might sound like underwater to the whales. With such huge echo chambers in their skulls, do they interrupt their mating songs and fall silent as they do when each ship passes? In our age of sonar mapping the sea floor, I hope beaked whales find peace to focus a beam of sound down through deep water, find squid to keep body and soul together. Sound picture. Cuvier's beaked whale beached near Bergen. Soft, soft, I whisper you back out to sea, push you away from the oil platform landing dock where you washed ashore, starving. Only four cuttlefish beaks in your stomach, swallowed, they say, before those plastic pieces. So young, the tooth had not yet emerged from your gum, and ribs and spine were still unfused. I heave your body off the platform and swim out to sea with you singing. I mouth duets to your soft clicks. We hear soft bouncing echoes come back from the depths. You catch the delicate image of a squid's drifting skirts.
three or four more. Is that the right timing?
I think we're getting close.
Close.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
Two,
okay.
Two. Two more.
Okay. Okay. Woven boat. We have grown into each other, our bog oak limbs polished as ore shafts, your elbow mending with mine. We find ourselves crammed in this coracle, rocked out of the same substance, our bodies lost somewhere while we lean to the journey. Our stillness is extraordinary as we balance one another in this eggshell of a dream. The storm in you roaring into me, my flight leading you to symmetry. Right. So I was going to read a new one, but the time has run out, so I'll end wherever.
That's short.
No, go for it.
Three more.
Okay. Three more? Okay, you've got it. You get your value. A pocket for eggs. And this one has a shape. Silt on linen, we trace driftwork, ladder rack, raised calcified trails, cockle shells curls among barnacles and peel paint, green on red, on aquamarine. One hand curled around the cat shark nest, a mermaid's purse, tide cast, dry. And this next one is called Carrie Stone, and it's about a 350 million year old chunk of limestone picked up at Inishmore in the Iron Islands. And something I'm trying to get at is kind of time, depth of time, and I'm still trying to work on this. So any suggestions, give them to me. Carrie Stone. In the wake of the wave that flowed and ebbed its way across steep time, while seabeds rearranged themselves, volcanoes breaking through to leave a trace of basin and blue, leave a shallow bowl and bank where stone-bodied life could thrive. A little girl asked her father if they could carry home one limestone chunk embedded with fossils in their small boat. Yes, he said, if you carry it yourself across the island. The stone grew heavier with every step. Her flip-flop broke. She climbed dry stone walls, floundered barefoot through thistles, marshes, along stony tracks, soft grassy verges, limestone smooth and cool under her soles. 50 years later, she weighs that stone from the ancient Tethys ocean, asks it for dreams. Under her pillow, wave formations, wave, sine wave, the roll and heave of one great breath, a sum total of life on earth. Everyone. So I know that you have to get on with an open mic. So your last one, new one. Okay. Okay, fine. Yeah. And you know, this was inspired by the remarks about you know, how we might make ourselves vulnerable. This is very recent. I wrote it. It's after Kieran Carson. I just went to Belfast to attend a conference about him and wrote it for this that purpose. Fetch. Happen a person inhabits another's coat for a moment, feels the tick-tock of their lost watch in a breast pocket. Meanwhile, her daughter, magician's apprentice, recovers a stack of Muji notebooks long forgotten in their cupboard. The pen is their own, an old Parker with chipped enamel, so plain it was never stolen by some fellow student. Not long ago, she asked the master how to write a fugue. Now she wants to write the earth whole and holy, no more fugues. Conjure them all back, every insect and amphibian, ghost ponds, old forests,
beside the goalposts, curlews feeding. So spring explodes with songs and croaks, so the city flaneur might meet an unexpected bird rather than a mirror. Happen, a pattern of words becomes mantra, mantle, cloak. May we fetch ourselves into other selves, better and quick. I forgot to tell you the source of that quotation, which is Kieran Carson said, in painting or writing, we double ourselves endlessly as we continue to make paintings or pieces of writing. By doing so, we fetch ourselves into other selves. Thank you.